You guys leave your skis by what you've come to call the door, even though it's not actually a door, it's a cave entrance. And
Nigel's also distributing flashlights to everybody.
yeah. And head inside. And you've done this before, so you're familiar with it. You get to the quote-unquote dead end at the back of the caveway. While you're there, you feel around, and Raven does the thing. And like last time, the door opens, and you're greeted with this beautiful but kind of tomb-like cave with the lake at the center and the glowing blue light and the blue rune moss. What do you do?
I just kind of go up to the water again and look down into it, going, Raven, are you sure this is a good idea? I mean, I trust you, but man, this just shit makes me uncomfortable, man.
Yes, just let me go in and I'll talk with her and it'll be fine. All right, then y'all can
So,
pull me
like,
out.
what is she, though?
Remember when we were at the library and I went off by myself?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, we didn't really find anything about there aside from, like,
Yeah.
historical stuff.
Well, I found this book. And it was mostly just boring fluff. Oh, the town was founded here, and there was a saloon, and the brothel women ran the place, but the miners brought in the money, but the women controlled all the money, blah, blah, blah. You know, normal stuff. But there was this one account from this one woman, and she was talking about how this area used to be not a sacred place per se, but it was like it was alive. And Raven starts going into that same letter description, talking about how the people felt safe there. They felt comforted. They felt like the mountain and the nature in this area was serene, was happy, and you know, anytime that you'd get lost in the woods, somehow you'd always end up finding your way out before sundown and all that sort of stuff. And I start to explain how this woman who was telling the story said that, oh, it was probably just a silly story, but my mother always used to say that at the heart of the mountain, this woman, or like that the mountain itself was a woman. Lady, help me out here.
Like the mountain had a heart.
The mountain had a
Sounds ridiculous.
heart. So for to refresh your memory, you read a story about a young woman asking her mother why it was called Santa Triste, why the mountain was sad, and that the settlers didn't know personally why it was called that, but that it was based off of probably a name that it had been given that roughly translated to the heart was lost, and that's why the mountain is sad.
So I explain all of that and say, from what I can tell, based on these runes and this, and I point at the part where it's essentially the lock point,
You
and
mean,
this.
well, the lock point you couldn't point to because it's down at the very, very bottom of
Okay.
the lake. But you can point to the other
Can I
ruins.
point to it on the piece of paper where I wrote down everything that I remembered? It
You,
doesn't matter. It doesn't
yeah.
matter. Based on all of this is a binding seal of some sort.
So
And
we're saying maybe the heart wasn't lost,
maybe
but
it
it
was.
was taken.
Yes.
Nigel's gonna get
Huh.
very, very hurt look in his face and go, "You read about this sort of thing? Well, that was my thing. Who am I?"
I did. But
Well, magic is your
what
thing,
about
so.
polar diving? Any chance you've read about that sort of thing?
Gotta admit, I didn't think we'd be up in a frozen ass lake. But he's gonna kind of pull off his backpack, going, "I still have the heat packs," and he's gonna pull a towel, saying, "I did have a feeling you might end up in there again." So,
Oh, thank God.
we're
Okay.
gonna let it out.
I mean, Raven could at least talk to her again.
I'm not
All
going to do
right,
anything she
I'm
doesn't
fine
want
with
me
that.
to. I'm not going to make her angry if that's what you're worried about. But I think
Well,
without her, I think the mountain's sick. I think.
yeah.
I don't like this at all, but we don't really
Neither
have
do
much other
I.
choice.
releasing godlike entities usually ends poorly for the people that release it.
To be fair, though, it does sound like it's a benevolent force, and it tried to help us out before. You know what? And I hate admitting this, because you know what? I don't like this stuff, but I think Raven's right. I think assisting this thing and aiding it in whatever way we can is actually our best move here.
I won't stop you.
Okay.
But I'm not, like, about this sort of thing.
I'm just saying, if this shit almost kills you again...
we're gonna kill it.
And at that incredibly serious line coming from Jack with a deadpan face, I'm going to laugh and smile for the first time in ages. For the first time in ages, rather. I know how to speak words. And
I just look at the water again and sigh on shit and start pulling off his hoodie and stuff.
Wait, no! What are you doing?
If you're going in, I'm making sure I can get you out as fast as possible. It's not going to bother me that much.
Yes, but if you go in there first...
I'm not saying I'm going in first. I'll be right behind you. I'm getting ready. I gotta mentally prep for this.
Yeah, there's no way in hell you're going in there alone again. Fuck that.
Just let me get in... And once I go under, then go ahead and go down, but don't pull me out until I start coming back.
Couldn't really tell last time, so I'm giving you a minute or two, but that's it. If I think it's been too long, I'm pulling you back, even if it's, you know, not long enough.
Raven sits there and sighs worriedly.
I mean, last time you fell in, I was in there immediately after you. I don't know how long it felt for you.
This time.
For me, it felt like maybe 5-10 seconds.
Yep. So I start undressing down to my underwear. I set my clothes off to the side so that they won't get splashed on when I get out of the water.
Okay.
So let's free a god, I guess.
That is also going to be like down to his boxers and be like, "L, the moment we're out, we're going to need that towel and heat packs."
Got
you got that? Cool.
This time
I can help too.
Instead of going in head first, I'm going to sit down on the edge, probably able to see my breath.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to try and acclimate myself to the water. And like, first of all, I'm going to try to acclimate myself to the air around me and like mm-hmm. take a while. And then I'll slowly start to slide in like you do when you're getting into a cold pool.
It is. The air around you is actually surprisingly tolerable. It's like taking your jacket off in a chilly day, but it's not so cold that you feel like you would if you were taking it off when it was snowing outside. So the warmth,
when the sun was coming down.
Yeah, it's not like that kind of air. There's something about the way that the cave is set up that it's cold, but you can stand it. The water, however, feels like straight liquid nitrogen. It's so cold it burns. Now that you've actually taken the time to put yourself in while you were conscious rather than just basically falling in, it is terrifyingly cold, and there's no way you can acclimate to it. It's just all or nothing.
All right, in that case, I'm going to stand up, hold my nose, and jump in.
And as she's going in, Nigel's going to finish tying the rope around his waist and toss the other end to Jack, going, "Just in case I pass out too, give it a pull."
Okay. Are you going in after her? Or are you gonna?
Yeah, like about like 3-4 seconds after her, I'm jumping in too.
Okay. So this is how it's going to go down. Raven, you jump in, and for everything up until the water covers your head is painful, painful cold. It's very much like jumping into an ice bath. It is so cold that your entire body seizes up. Any breath that you were holding, like, just is gone. There's no way you can hold it. Mm-hmm. But the moment the water covers your head, it's gone. And instead of water, you feel like you're floating through this black void. It's warm, and it's gentle. And then as you're gently coming down, things start to form around you. You see the same beautiful valley filled with flowers, and the same distant forest, and the same mountains off in the horizon, and the sky is a beautiful blue with a spot of clouds here and there, and it's pleasant, and it's sunny. The sun is a little bit further down than it was the last time you were here. In fact, it's almost the golden hour. And there's this just kind of gentle kind of gilding to everything as it sinks. But there's no coldness to it. It's very warm. And you're alone in the field at first. And for a second you think, maybe she's not here. But then you see a bird off in the distance. And it's flying in this joyful, beautiful pattern with swirls and barrel rolls in a way that no bird ever really naturally flies. And then it starts to circle very slowly as it comes down towards you. And finally, it lands on your shoulder. Just this gentle little thing. It's a small house sparrow. And it cheeps at you. And for a moment, you think, is she gone? Is this it? Am I just standing here with the animals? And then the bird lifts itself off your shoulder and flies forward in front of you. And where there was a bird, now there's a woman. It's the same woman standing in front of you. And I realize I never described her before, but the way I pictured her in my head was Lucy Lawless from Xena Warrior Princess, only with really long Godiva-like hair that very artfully covers parts that are otherwise naked.
So, yeah. I remember you described her as hella fucking gorgeous.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah.
And she looks at you with those bright blue eyes, and she kind of smiles and says, you're back.
Yes. And I say her name, but since we're probably communicating in our heads anyway, I don't have to say that, because that would take eons to speak anyhow. Yes, name, hello. I have news.
Well, tell it to me.
As soon as we got back, I started doing some research, trying to figure out what was going on, the people that were hurting, and what was happening, and I found this story. The story of a mountain. And I'm going to do my best to communicate to her, like, show her an image of the mountain range, as best as I know it, from the highest vantage point possible. All the trees, the mountains, the forest.
Go on.
Go ahead. I was going to say, and as I talk, I'm going to try and continue to visualize this and almost try and project it outwards.
Okay. So you're trying to influence the space around you to see if you can change it?
I mean, if that's the thing I can do without using magic, yes.
Okay.
But otherwise, I'm just going to try and communicate that image to her mind.
Okay. You communicate it to her mind very clearly, because she doesn't even... You don't actually, in fact, you get the sense that she's not thinking or looking at what you're projecting at her. She's looking beyond it into your own mind. And not in a way that feels intrusive or like she's
She just knows me completely, and it's my own failing for trying to communicate.
She can it's more like it's not that she knows you completely, it's that she can read your meaning more than you are able to project it.
Yes.
And so she kind of looks at it and says, I don't know this place. And you realize, as you're trying to mentally overlap that mountain range with what you're seeing around you, that it doesn't match. The place that you're looking at and the place that you're picturing, they're not the same. And she looks at this mental image, and you can kind of get the sense that she's almost examining it the way that you would examine a map. And she goes, I don't know this area, this place that you're showing me. What do you want to know about it?
It's not what I want to know about it. I'm sorry, I'm really not good at this, and I'm going to try and correct it as best I can. But I'm guessing I fail at that, so I'm just going to explain. There was a woman, and I tell her that story because I can't go back into that again.
Okay.
But essentially, and she was always wondering why the mountain was And when I left this and went back out into my world, your name was written there on the walls, but there was also this binding point, this lock keeping you here. I know that you've been here for...
You get the sense that she... You get the sense from the last time that she's been there for possibly millennia. This is...
Yeah.
A very long time.
Even the word millennia doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
So I just communicate time to her. And I know that maybe it's possible that you forgot. But I think without you there, bad things are happening. Horrible things are happening. People are disappearing and dying.
She stands there and she's listening to you very intently as you say these things. And finally, she looks confused. And she reaches forward at one point and, like, stops. Just maybe, like, an inch from touching your hand. And she looks at you and goes, "May I?"
"Please."
And she reaches out and she touches you just very gently on the hand. Just two fingertips. And you remember from the last time that when she touched you, it was this... incredibly
fire.
Burning sensation. Yes. This time it's the same. It's like when you basically barely brush up against a hot pan, and it takes a moment for you to realize that you're touching it, but it's still incredibly hot. But she does that, and she does it very quickly. And as she does, you get the sense that unlike the last time when you were trying to project this image and she was trying to read the meaning that you weren't able to get, this time it's actually an intentional dive into your mind. And that was why she was asking permission. And she seems to be leaning inwards as if she's looking for not just an understanding of what you mean, but an understanding of this other world that you're talking about. And she starts to you kind of almost get the sensation like a string is being pulled, and she's pulling it from your mind. It's very strange. It's not uncomfortable and it's not painful, but it's so weird feeling just knowing that this information
is
being...
Like brain floss.
Yeah, like floss isn't really the right word. It's like if you had a piece of string between your fingers, more like, not so much your teeth, and we're just pulling it very gently. It's a strange sensation of knowing that it is moving through without doing any damage or anything, any kind of cutting. And she starts to pull out this meaning, and you're not entirely sure what she's pulling out, but you know it has to do with the world around you and with what was happening with the Yeti and what was going on in general down in Santa Triste. And when she finally finishes, it's really only a split second, but it felt like years almost at the same time. And she finally kind of pulls her fingers away from your hand and says, "I am not familiar with this world, and I don't know that place, but that has nothing to do with me." And then she stops and she looks at you, and you get this sense that she pulled out more than just the place and the events that had happened yesterday. In fact, you realize that she knows everything that's happened since then. And she looks at you, and her eyes narrow in thought, and she says, "There are grave forces at work. I have to make it known that they have nothing to do with me. However, I do worry for you." And as she looks at you, you get this sense that she's not just looking at your eyes, but looking through you. There's a darkness hanging over you. It is a shadow, but it's not... And she stops, and again, you get the sense that she doesn't really know how to express what she means, even though she knows what she means. It's just like before, that she doesn't have the words, and she doesn't seem to understand a way in which she could convey it that would make sense for you. Finally, she goes, "Be careful, Raven. There's a darkness, and it is not wholly of your making, but you are very vulnerable to it." And then she looks past you, out into the horizon, and for a moment, her face looks... almost fearful. And this time it's not that she's looking at you or at what she seemed to have seen in you. She's looking beyond, and she says, "And there's something else. I can't see it, but..." And she looks back at you and says, "The gift I gave you is one that is very powerful, but in the wrong hands, it can be dangerous. Guard it closely. And then she very gently puts her hand on your hand, and it burns, but she seems to be intentionally trying to keep it from hurting. And she says, I have great faith in you, Raven. You seem fearful and afraid right now. I don't think you should be. You're stronger than you imagine you are. Use what I've given you, and use it well.
How? And Raven's sitting here crying, partially because of the burn. Because burning hurts.
Mm-hmm.
But also because Raven did not expect this conversation to go this way. I feel like I'm shooting in the dark, and like everything's coming down around me. All I know is that your moss is magic, and I don't know what to do.
She looks at you and she says, that's... And she's smiling now. And whatever, you know, whatever concern she was showing before seems to have disappeared. And she just smiles and says, Raven, that's all we ever do. We don't know what we're doing here. And oftentimes we don't know how to use what's been given to us. But we make do. I don't know how you can use my gift. I only know that you can. And then she kind of gestures at the field, and now the sun has sunk to the point where it's almost below the horizon, and the field is this bright kind of deep gold, and the shadows are getting longer, and she says, there is much in this world that we can't understand, but we can always understand our own hearts if we look deep enough. I feel that you're afraid. Don't be. And then she kind of takes a breath and looks around and looks back at you and says, you have incredible kindness in you, Raven, to come back. And I know that you did it for me and for others, but you're looking to the wrong person for answers. What you need is not here.
Where is it? And tears are streaming down her face right now.
She looks like she wants to, like, help brush them off and knows that that would be probably a painful, bad idea. Instead, she just smiles at you again. I believe you'll find it, Raven. And I also believe that it's time for you to go.
No, please. Please don't.
You're gonna be fine, Raven. And she kind of just gestures, and you start to see the edges of this vision in front of you turn darker and darker, and you realize that your lungs are starting to burn again. She's not doing it on purpose. It's, you get this feeling she's trying to reject at you, that it's not that she's casting you out. She doesn't want you to feel rejected. She just wants you to understand that she's doing this so that you can survive.
I need to learn more. Please.
You have everything I could give you, Raven. How you use it is up to you, but don't be afraid. And then with that, everything around you goes dark and you feel the burning in your lungs again, and suddenly your vision is filled with the glow of that moss and the deep, deep, bright light that is coming from below you in the water. And you feel as Nigel's arms are wrapped around you, and as soon as he sees that your eyes are open...
Yes, one arm around the waist, just swimming towards the surface, just to get head above water, basically. And at this point, like, just, he was holding his breath while he was down there with her for the past, I don't know, however long it's been.
It was about a minute and 30 seconds, but the water is so cold that you're, like, even though you can't feel the cold as much, you can feel your muscles almost reacting to it. Oh, and yeah, you know that it has to be intensely worse for Raven.
And his bruised ribs are probably burning at this point, so
yeah,
he's moving about as fast as he can just to get them out of there, and also giving like a tug on the rope to be like, Jack, yeah, reel us in.
Jack's gonna do that. Yeah. Try to reel him in.
Yeah, and as soon as
would help.
Yeah, as soon as they break the surface, you, Jack, and Elle are all hauling Raven out of this water. She didn't breathe any water in this time. You kind of get the sense that her body almost froze. It was so cold that it didn't actually take a breath in. So this time she's not spitting water, and it takes you a moment, Raven, to kind of like release your muscles and to almost be able to open your eyes, but you're not passed out almost like last time. You're very conscious of what's happening.
Nigel's still laying on his back for a moment.
I immediately give him towels and heat stuff.
Yeah, I was going to lay on his back for a moment, just kind of coughing and catching his breath, like,
Raven
lungs on fire.
Just sobbing uncontrollably.
I hope that's good tears of joy.
So, what's going on? Are we going to do the thing? Unplug this hole?
Let's dry off first before we do anything else.
No, I was wrong. She has nothing to do with this.
Well, so we jumped in freezing cold water to find out this isn't where we need to be. And I was going to, like, crack one of those heat packs and, you know, hand a couple to Raven, you know, just have one for himself as he kind of dries off and starts getting dressed again. All right, team, we don't need to be here. Ah, shit. Ran out of options. I think one of our only options left is to talk to the daughter?
What's her face? Name that I forgot. Out of character, I forgot.
We heard what Grant said on the phone.
Yeah.
What did he say?
Right, we didn't tell you guys.
Oh,
shit.
Yeah.
When we listened in on Grant, and he seemed pissed.
He was pissed.
He was extraordinarily angry that someone was asking about what had happened to their dad. And I think we need to talk to Holly.
Whoever he was talking to, he thinks that they told us or they're telling people.
Wait, what?
Yeah. We've been trying to find you guys part of the afternoon here, making our way up. Fully spaced on that.
I thought...
We have another option.
Oh, no. I thought maybe telling him would... I think I just put another person in danger.
I don't know. Either way, we should get back to the lodge. Dry off, warm up, get dressed. And, Jack, we spotted those skis outside. How about we get bundling those up? Yeah.
So the four of you warm up. And now that you're not in soaking wet clothes, it's much simpler than it was last time. You manage to get dry using the heat packs. You get warm. And once you're all dressed and feel ready for it, you can head out and you guys grab your skis. It's much easier than the last two times that you walked this path because you've been here before. So, excuse me. You manage to get back to the ski lift. And at this point, it's probably about 4:30 in the afternoon. It took a long time to get up there. Even though it was easier, it was still a pretty hard trek. And then the amount of time it took you guys to get warm again after your little skinny dip into the pond took longer than you had intended. So you managed to get back down. You take the skis with you and you get back into the mountain village. And you turn in the skis at the ski rentals that you took them from. And then you guys find yourself in the RV headed back to the lodge. Is there anything you want to do before you get there?
I just remembered I had the donuts and I haven't eaten any of them. I'm going to give everyone a donut.
I was about to say, as soon as Jack pulls one of those out, and I just like, just one hand out, like not even looking, like one hand on the wheel, one hand out, like, give me.
Everybody gets one.
Yeah.
Even if they don't want it.
Raven tries to say no to a donut, but takes it because she can't say no, and then just goes in the back corner of the RV.
We don't peer pressure very often, but when donuts are involved, yes.
Okay. Is there anything, Elle, did you want to do anything before you guys get to the lodge?
No, she's just sitting close to Raven.
So you guys make it down. It's not a very long trip at all to get down to the lodge. You park the RV, and it looks normal. Everything looks fine. You see a couple of tourists and skiers who are kind of coming in early, even though the sun is still light and there's plenty of time to ski. The diner is starting to fill up a little bit. As you walk into the lodge, however, you notice there's no one at the front counter. Which is unusual, because every time you've come into the lodge, it's always been Grant or Holly who has been at the front.
I'll just go see if he can maybe read a bad situation and glance around. Or, I guess, investigate. Which one would apply? Investigate mystery?
I would say it's investigate, because you don't know if it's a bad situation. Just know that it's strange.
All right.
Is there a bell on the counter?
There is a bell.
Jack's going to walk up and just start ringing it.
Okay.
That would be sharp for investigate mystery. 13?
Okay.
Does 13 do it?
Yeah, 13 definitely does it. So, Jack, you walk up and start ringing the bell, and as you do, you expect somebody to show up, and eventually, after hitting it multiple times, one of the waitresses leans out and says, I think they're in the office. Sorry, they'll be back soon. And then she kind of, like, immediately goes back into the diner. It's not the same waitress from before. This is somebody else from one of the evening shifts. And,
one of the ones I scared?
Yeah, probably not the one you scared, but one of the ones that would have been on that shift.
Story has spread of the legend of Raven.
Yeah.
Terror to all who serve food.
And as Jack is doing that, Nigel, you're looking around and you start to lean over the desk and kind of walk around and see if you can notice anything. And as you walk back towards that hallway from where you were before with Elle, you hear voices. Not very clear. They're not yelling. You just hear voices talking.
I'm going to try and as quietly as I can to start making my way down there, just trying to listen in.
Are you stealthing?
I mean, as stealthily as I can walk. I mean, I imagine it's like a hallway with closed door.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to say you just walk because it's fine. The door is closed.
Just
and
watching my step.
People are talking. You get up to the office door and you can hear that there are people talking in the office. And you recognize that it's Grant and Holly's voices. And they're not yelling, but they definitely aren't having a nice conversation.
Seeing Nigel, I almost said Jack, seeing Nigel go off. I'm going to do my best. Wait, do I have a headache?
Nope.
I'm going to do my best to listen in and see if I can pinpoint Holly's voice.
Okay.
Her mental voice.
Go ahead and roll telepathy.
It's an 11.
Okay. You can hear Holly's voice. And it's like what usually happens when people are talking and you're trying to read their thoughts at the same time. There's always kind of like this double echo. So you don't know what she's saying, but the thought of what she's trying to say and the thought of what she's thinking are kind of overlapping. But both of them seem to be a sense of indignation and also a little bit of fear and concealment. But it's not afraid of what's happening. It's something more internal.
Would I be able to actually hear what they're saying?
You lean on the door like you and Elle did before, but the voices aren't loud enough for you to really hear through the thick wooden door. It wasn't like when he was yelling on the phone.
I mean, I guess I listen to try and find her brother's voice as well.
I'm gonna say with that role that you do too, and it's very similar. Again, he's saying something and thinking something at the same time. And this one is also kind of anger, and humiliation at the same time.
I don't know if I have to roll read a bad situation for this, but I'm gonna go up to the room so that I'm not there when they come out.
Your room?
Yes.
Okay. What do you, are you saying that you're gonna go and hide in the room until they come out, or are you going to try and lure them out? Like, what are we doing?
I'm just going up to my room so that if they eventually come out, I'm not there to be a point of contention that causes problems.
Okay.
So basically hiding.
Okay, you don't have to go all the way to your room for that. Like, you can literally just go around the corner to be, like, out of sight. But if you want to go to your room, you can.
I'm going to go to my room.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to go to my room, too, but to do something.
All right. What do the rest of you do in this situation?
I really want to try and listen in a bit more, but I'm feeling if I do anything, I'm just probably going to get caught.
I am still trying to listen in, though, by the way.
Yeah. I think at this point, he realizes it's not what he can do, and if he does anything, it's probably going to make it worse. So he's going to kind of back out towards the lobby again.
Okay.
Try to just be inconspicuous.
All right. Are you just going to hang out in the lobby? Is that what we're doing?
Basically, or maybe around the corner from the lobby, just try and listen in, maybe, because I imagine a bigger lobby, voices might echo, so if they come out and they're still talking,
okay,
I'd be able to hear something then.
Alright, so let's go to Jack first. Jack, what are you doing in your room?
I'm gonna call the bakery.
Okay.
And try to, like, well, I know they're, like, connected with the BPI because, you know, they work under, all staffed by the BPI.
Okay.
And I'm going to try to say in, like, a code where I know it's, you know, not a secure line, but I'm going to try to convey that I need a new phone because it was lost.
All right. So you
try to catch him up to speed with the Yeti and everything.
Yeah. You call the bakery and it rings for a little bit, and finally someone answers, and it's this really bright, cheery voice, and it goes, "Hello, Bippy Bakery." And you recognize it as your girlfriend's voice.
Well, I'm still going to try that. I'm going to say, "Hi, yeah, I'd like to order something."
Jack, is that you?
Yeah.
And she's kind of, do you want to tell people about your girlfriend, like describe her, or do you want to like leave it?
I'll just leave it.
Okay. So.
Because I haven't thought of anything.
So she's on the phone and she goes, is this a Bippy thing?
It is.
Okay. Well, sure, we can take your order. What do you need?
I don't know what to say.
You give her the code word for cell phone, which is croissant.
Yes.
So you
said, I'm guessing there's also a code word for Yeti.
There probably is, but you don't know what that would be in terms of
That was all the way at the back of the code word dictionary, and it just gets boring.
Yeah.
So she's kind of listening to you as you use these code words and try to explain your situation. She goes, whoa, Jack, are you all right? Is everything okay? Like, are you safe?
I'm a little hurt. Almost died, I think, yesterday.
do we need to send in any special delivery boys to help you, or would the croissant do?
I think you might, but I'm unsure about it, you know?
Okay. Well, all right.
Okay. Send the usual person that you know.
She kind of sounds confused and she's like, sure, the usual.
You know, her.
All right. How about this? We'll send you the croissant and you can talk to one of my managers who can put you in touch with somebody for a bigger order if you need it. All right?
That sounds wonderful.
All right. It's good to hear from you, Jack. You let me know if anything's really dangerous, right?
Yeah, I will.
Okay. All right. And she sounds like she wants to say something like really embarrassing, but there's like a voice on the other side. Hey, excuse me. Do you sell bread here or what? Like, I've been waiting like 5 fucking minutes for you to come. And she goes, okay, I'll be right there with you. Sorry. Okay. I'll talk to you later. Okay, Jack?
Talk to you later. Bye.
All right. Bye. And then she hangs up.
Aww.
Yep.
All right, so we're going to go over to Raven. Raven, you're sitting in your room, and you realize, just because of the way that your mental powers work, that you're basically almost directly above them as they're in the office. And now that you kind of are alone and have a moment to think and to just process on your own without feeling like you have to, like... I mean... You were breaking down in front of your friends, but at the same time, like, even then, you were trying to hold yourself together. And now you're on your own, and there's this moment.
I was actually going to request, I had an idea of, once I got up there, I was going to go into the bathroom and try to draw a bath and try to warm up.
Okay.
And the way that Raven used to almost always do that was that she would, you know, with a wave of her hand, light some candles that she brought along, and another wave of her hand lights some incense, and another wave start the tub up, and she goes to do that, and then she stops, remembering everything that's happened so far when she's just used magic willy-nilly. And so instead she goes over and she grabs a lighter, probably from Elle's spare jacket, and lights the candles and lights the incense and gets in the tub after drawing a bath the normal muggle human way, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of that happens, and then what you were saying.
Okay. And you're laying in the bath, and you're kind of having this almost 11 in the salt water pool moment where your head's under the water and you're trying to focus and kind of bring your thoughts and yourself together. And so you're kind of floating there in this like darkness of your mind, and in the distance, not an actual distance, but like a mental distance, you can hear the voices of Holly and Grant having their own mental conversations as they're talking at each other but not really listening. And you don't really focus in on it just yet, because as you're floating there, you feel that place where the woman touched you on the back of your hand. It doesn't burn anymore, but it's a faint sensation. And it's almost like a gentle hand on your own hand. And you hear again in your voice, in your head, just that memory, not an actual voice, but the memory of her saying, "Don't be afraid." And then it's gone. And as you're floating there, the voices of Grant and Holly come swimming up closer to you, and you can hear them clearly now. And you hear Holly as she's thinking, "I didn't tell anybody. I don't know why he thinks I told anybody. Who would I tell? He knows I would never tell anyone." And then you hear Grant's voice going like, "How could she? How could she? Isn't it bad enough that the entire town thinks we're a laughingstock? Isn't it bad enough that everybody laughs at the fact that our father was a drunk? No, now she has to go and tell tourists about it?" And this just keeps going on back and forth, as you can kind of get this sense of Grant feeling humiliated and Holly feeling almost guilty. And you don't really know exactly why, but what she's saying is a consistent, truthful denial that she didn't tell anyone that their father had gone missing, that she didn't tell anyone about what he had been doing, you know, before he disappeared, that she didn't tell anyone anything, and Grant not believing her. So let's switch back to Nigel. Nigel, you are hanging out in the lobby just around the corner, and after about, I'd say, 5-ish minutes of just kind of, you know, loitering in a nonchalant way, you hear a sound as the office door opens down that hallway and then closes, and two pairs of footsteps come walking out, sounding rather harassed in the way that people walk when they're not happy, but they have to, you know, can't like stomp away from each other. And then you finally hear as Holly gets back to the desk and starts shuffling papers. And you can see now as Grant walks past you in the doorway and takes a hard right into the lounge and kind of like walks into the lounge to the farthest corner and like throws himself into a chair facing away from you in front of one of the fireplaces.
All right. Well, is anyone else still downstairs with me? Because I know...
Yeah, Elle is Jack down there with you.
Okay, Elle's with me? All right. I'm going to glance at Ellen and be like, all right, you want to try your luck with one? I'll try my luck with the other.
I was going to say, I didn't get a chance because I was AFK at the time, but Elle would have went back up to the room.
Okay.
And just waited for Raven to finish.
Right. Yeah, we'll retcon that and we'll say that Elle went up to the room. So we'll go to Elle's thing in a second, but let's see what right. Nigel is doing. So Nigel, you're alone down there and you watch as Holly, now you know that she's probably back at the desk from what you can hear, and you see as Grant is sitting in a chair in the lounge, kind of like hunched over, not really looking at anybody. What do you do?
Alright, I'm gonna kind of make my way towards up to the desk and kind of like glance back and be like, kind of gesture at my shoulder like, wow, your brother doesn't seem to be in a good mood today. You guys alright?
Holly looks at you and just there's this moment where she tries to fake for the tourists, and there's just, it doesn't work. And she kind of, like, pinches the bridge of her nose and sighs and goes, yeah, it's just it's a family thing. Can I help you?
No, I'm just kind of waiting down for my friends. We're gonna go grab dinner in a bit.
Okay.
Yeah, family stuff, though, yeah. I know about that. This thing, like, lean on the counter is gonna make small talk. Try and read, like, if there's anything you can really do to maybe...
Okay, I want you to try... Opening, I want you to roll plus cool for this, because you're... Let me look at this real quick. No, roll charm. Yeah, I keep wanting... Yeah, this is the one problem I have with the way that these are named. Charm and cool, like, to act cool is how I want to think of it, but you're actually rolling charm. So you're, you're trying
to think of cool as keeping your cool.
Yeah, that's what they.
Charm is you're trying to be charming.
Yeah, that's what they intended it as. But my brain is always saying like act cool. All
right.
So roll charm and to see if you can kind of make yourself presenting yourself as like open to listening.
I never roll well with charm. I've not rolled well with charm once.
Mm-hmm.
With my +1 to charm, I've got a 7.
Okay.
This is the best I've ever rolled for Char.
It's a mixed result. So I'm going to say that she kind of looks at you and there's this moment of just like, God, am I really that desperate to talk to some complete fucking stranger? And then she like, yeah, I guess I fucking am. And just like, you don't have siblings, do you? She says that out loud.
I've got a younger sister. Yeah, I know siblings can be a pain, right?
Look, do you and your sibling ever... Do you have any disagreements that you just can't seem to get past?
The odd one. I've definitely been there.
Yeah, well, my brother thinks that I am the biggest piece of shit on the planet because he seems to think that I would go and blab about every fucking problem our family has ever had to complete strangers. Which, considering what I'm doing right now, he's probably fucking right.
Oh, no, no. I mean, this is just between us. I'll promise.
Well,
Scout's Honor. I was never a scout, but Scout's Honor.
She laughs at that. Kind of. Yeah. Well, he was a scout for a while, actually, back when we all lived together. And she kind of, like, sits back, and there's a little chair that she sits on, and that kind of brings her down below eye level for anybody who's walking into the door. And if, but where you are, you can still see her, and she's kind of just...
I also think I kind of lean on the counter a little bit, is, you know, just casually...
And she just, like, leans forward and puts a hand, puts her face in her hand and kind of just says, I don't know what happened. We used to be close, and now it's like everything I do is wrong, and I don't know, it's been like that since Dad left.
Ran out, I guess. I mean, that kind of stuff can be pretty hard on kids, and, you know, that kind of stuff sticks with you.
Well... He wasn't a kid. I don't know if you'd call me a kid. Anyways, I don't know. I shouldn't be talking about this. I mean, that's the whole fucking problem. He seems to think I'm telling everybody about it, but...
Well, who's he to judge?
He's my brother. He's the only family I have left, and he thinks I'm a piece of shit.
Clearly, to me, it sounds like he's the one that's got a bit of an issue here.
Yeah, well, you try telling him that.
And I was going to glance in the direction of like the lounge and be like, you know, I could, but I don't think that'd be a very good idea. I am not good with people, especially angry people.
Yeah, well, I'm not very good with it either. Anyways, I'm sorry. I'm just dumping on you.
It's all right. I've got time to kill. And honestly, I don't mind chatting.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. I mean, you're probably the first person I've said this to in... God, I don't know. Years? I don't even tell Mark about it. And she's starting to, like, look like she's talking out loud more than she's talking to you. Mm. Like, she's thinking through her own thoughts with you as an audience to kind of bounce off of. And then she kind of shakes herself and kind of realizes what she's doing. And she goes, anyways, I've got work to do. I do appreciate the offer, but... I should let you go. And she kind of picks up some papers and shuffles them around. And it's very obvious, like, at this point that she's kind of dismissing you because she seems really embarrassed that she even let her guard slip that much.
Yeah, and Nigel's kind of, like, I get, like, the idea. Like, it's like, all right, I'm not great at this kind of thing. He's like, all right, so, yeah, it's fine. Hey, if you ever need an ear to listen to, I'm not going to be around here much anyway, so who am I going to tell? Anyway, you have a good night.
You too. And thanks.
That's no problem. And he's just going to kind of make his way back towards, like, the restaurant area. Assume that he's waiting for everybody else.
Okay. With that, let's switch over to Elle. Elle, you make your way up towards the room. And by the time you get there, Raven has drawn a bath and is currently kind of just floating in it. What do you do?
I think for now she's just kind of waiting, probably pacing a bit, walking back and forth. Just kind of lost in thought of how completely fucking frustrated she is of all this magic bullshit that Raven almost died 3 times. They all almost died and she couldn't do shit. And she hates that she couldn't do shit.
Raven, you're floating in the bath and you're listening to Holly and Grant kind of have this argument and this inability to really communicate to each other, and then eventually they seem to go their separate ways. And as you let them drift off from your mind, you start to sense a very familiar presence, just kind of hovering at the edge. And you don't react at first. You don't immediately get up and go to see her, but you can kind of feel as Elle is just pacing back and forth outside the room and thinking and thinking, and she seems so frustrated and concerned and worried. What do you do?
Well, you know how if you sit in a bath for too long, it just kind of becomes lukewarm, boring-ass bath water, and it's no longer comfortable, it's just
tepid.
It's just there.
Yeah.
That's sort of the point that it's hitting now, especially having been really cold getting into it and everything like that. So Raven gets out, and Raven's trying to think too. And then she has an idea. So she drains the bath, dries herself off, puts a towel in her hair, and walks out to Elle. Elle, can we talk?
Yeah.
I know that right now everything's going wrong. All the little tricks that I used to do just breaking. And I thought that if I only used it for important things, that maybe it'd be fine. But I don't know. I think maybe I need to take a break.
What do you mean exactly?
Well, before we came up here, you saw me around the house. I'd light candles and flip light switches and all of that stuff. And I know that what I can do is powerful, and I'm sure that if I practice with it, it'll be fine. But do you think maybe I'm relying on it too much?
I don't know.
When I was underwater, when I was talking with the woman there, who, by the way, is not the heart of the mountain, or at least not what the way we thought, she said that there was something dark within me, and not just of my own making. And I think if I'm going to start doing any of that big magic stuff, I need to look into that. And I think... And Raven sort of starts to smile as the gears start turning. I think I have an idea. We need to get information out of Holly and her brother, right? We need to get information from them, but I can't use magic. But do you remember how my mom used to always seem like she knew everything?
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't always magic. But I think, and I start scheming with Elle, and I'm going to leave it at that and leave it in whispers for a bit. But what I will say is that as I get ready, I start looking through my stuff, and I'm like, no, 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 no. And I look over to Elle and ask, Elle, did you bring the green dress?
Yes, I think.
And I keep digging, and then I find it, and I get ready.
All right. At this point, I'd say all the various scenes have kind of gotten to the same part. So Sandwolf, Nigel is at this point kind of walking away from Holly. Jack, you finished your phone call with the Bippy, and you know that your new cell phone is on its way. You don't know when or where it will show up, but they always seem to manage to find you. And Elle and Raven, you've had your time to talk and get ready, and now you're leaving your room and coming downstairs. It was a very short bath, but it was still long enough. So, Nigel, you're at this point probably hovering in the foyer, looking a little unsure of what to do, because you just talked to Holly. Brant is still sitting in that chair. Jack, I would say that you are at this point probably leaving your room, so you would see Raven and Elle coming out of theirs. What do the four of you do?
Question, and I'll roll for effect, but I didn't think about it. Can I try to adjust machete so maybe it's not as uncomfortable and try rolling again to hide it?
Yeah, if you were in the room, I'm going to say that you can change into something that is a little more machete ready?
Friendly?
Machete friendly, ready. Yeah. And I'm going to say that you would have had some kind of like long jacket or something available to adjust it. So we'll say that you managed to hide the machete this time without having to roll for it. The last time was you weren't really prepared. Now you're prepared. Okay. So yeah, what do the four of you do? You're at this point probably all collecting into the same general area.
I think Nigel's still kind of waiting downstairs by the entrance to the restaurant area, just kind of checking his watch, being like, are they coming down? We didn't say we were coming down. I made that up. Should I go to the room? Go to the RV? I don't know what to do.
You guys get to the top of the stairs and just see Nigel, like, doing that thing where somebody doesn't really know which way they're going, so they kind of, like, stop, head one way, stop, head the other, kind of stop and, like, dance a little bit on their feet. Them,
there's just, like, a sigh of relief. I'm like, oh, thank God, I'm not alone. I'm lost.
Nigel, you see Elle and Raven kind of standing at the top of the stairs. Y'all are headed in the same general direction, so you all end up meeting up in the foyer. Yeah, I guess this is the point where you decide what you're doing.
Is Grant around?
Yeah, he's in the...
Yeah, I was gonna ask the same thing.
You guys wouldn't know this, but Nigel would basically be able to point you immediately to the fact that he's still sitting in the lounge.
Mm. Alright, I'm going to walk over there, and I'm guessing Elle's gonna try and sneakily follow behind and or hang back and double back around?
Okay. What are you trying to do, Elle?
And borrow his wallet? Quote, borrow.
Quote, unquote, borrow. All right.
When I borrow Jack's cell phone, yeah.
Yeah. Raven, are you trying to distract him while she does this? Are you?
Yes. I walk up to him and I say, you know, I thought that you were going to be an upstanding person, but then the way you treated your sister, and I'm going to slap him across the face.
Oh, shit.
Okay, well, we'll deal with the fallout in a second. I want you to roll to help out Raven, and I want you, Elle, to roll for... Do you have a power to like, pick pockets, or is it just...
No, because that would be a background thing, and I don't think we did it.
Okay, so I'm just going to say you, in general, just act under pressure.
All right,
so I rolled a... This is cool, right? Do that?
Yeah.
Yes. All right. So then I rolled exactly 10. Thank you. Plus 0.
Yeah. So that's another nat 12.
Well. So
how many nat 12s
is that this game? Damn. You know what? This is like the polar opposite of the Yeti fight so far.
Oh, you're wasting them all. I mean, what? Never mind. This is what happens. Okay. So this is what happens. I have to center myself because I'm going to edit out my inability to talk in the podcast, so it has to sound like I just go straight into it. So, Elle, you rolled a nat 20. It's not a nat 20. Elle, you rolled a natural 12.
It's basically a nat 20.
So this is what happens. Elle, you circle around, and Raven, you just managed to, like, how dare you? And the moment you said, how dare you, like, Grant kind of startles up from his chair because, like, it was super fucking quiet in there. And there's, like, turns out there's, like, no other tourists in there anymore. Like, he thought there are people, and they just disappeared. And he kind of, like, startles and stands up, and then, like, as he does, you being, like, the super stealthy person that you are, Elle, just, he doesn't see you at all as you kind of, like, come around him and reach into his pocket and just, you know exactly where his wallet is because it does that thing where, like, when guys have a big old fucking wallet and it, like, leaves a brick imprint on their butt. So you know exactly where it is. And you just very gently reach into his jean pockets and pull it out, and you do this so quickly, like you're doing it the Artful Dodger, kind of like immediately get it out and kind of hold it up so that Elle can see, or not Elle, so that Raven can see. And Raven isn't looking at you as you do this, so she just keeps yelling at him and then slaps him for absolutely no fucking reason because you already have the wallet.
No, this is just the beginning.
So you're holding the wallet up, and then you kind of, like, sneak it back into your hands, and as you do, Raven, you, after you've slapped him, you look over and go, in your head, like, oh, she's got it, okay. And so, what do you... Also, the other two of you don't know what the fuck they're doing, so what do you do when you see Raven just out of the fucking blue slap this man?
Nigel's jaws is hanging open as he watches this unfold, like, I did not expect this. I thought we were gonna, you know, talk, maybe come up with something, but not. They're just going right into it. So,
what about you?
Yeah, Jack doesn't say anything, but he thinks to Raven, Man, I was going to talk to him.
So you guys are watching as this commotion is going down, and this is not a huge place, so the sound is echoing pretty loudly as Raven is kind of yelling, and like Holly just, the moment she starts hearing yelling, just stands up, and she's like, what the, and then she can hear as like Raven, you're yelling like, how dare you do this to your sister, and she just, oh no, and like just starts like booking it into the lounge room behind you, Raven. And she kind of like sees what you do as soon as you slap her brother. What are you doing? And Grant is standing there just holding his face, looking like, what the fuck? Like, he doesn't say anything. He looks shocked.
I continue. You want to know how I knew about what happened? You want to know how I let slip what happened? I'll tell you, Grant Marshall Redinger. You're an open book to people like me. I don't have to think to know that someone like you has personality weaknesses but thinks that they're generally able to compensate for them. I don't have to think to know that you're the sort to be overly critical of yourself and have a great need for people to like and admire you because it is written all over your face.
What the fuck? And he's, like, just stuttering. He, like, has no idea who the fuck you are, first of all. Like, he knows that you're a guest, but that's it. And second of all, like, what the fuck you're saying?
Listen, Grant. You're the sort of guy that we see around here all the time.
Around here? You're not even from here! You know, he's like...
Anytime I go on vacation, there's someone like you. Someone who thinks that just because you had some problems in childhood getting laid, that therefore every woman is out to get you?
And now there's, like, Holly is just, like, coming up to you like, excuse you, and she's like,
and you, I turn on her.
Mm-hmm.
Don't even start. You are fantastic, by the way. The way he treats you is terrible. I can't believe he thought that you would be the one outing what happened to your poor father, the way that he died in that car crash.
As soon as you say that, like, Grant stares over at his sister, and she is like staring at you like, what did he say? There are tears in her eyes. She looks like she's on the verge of crying, and she looks utterly confused and at the same time terribly hurt. What are you talking about? What do you know about my father?
I immediately shift tone. So you didn't know.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Do you have an office where we could talk privately?
Who the fuck are you?
I'll be more than happy to answer any question.
Grant is, like, looking at her, and she looks like she's about to, like, just start sobbing and probably hit you, too. And, this, like, moment of expression comes over where he looks just as confused as she is, but, like, he realizes that something is happening and that they need to get out of the line of public, because now diners who were in the dining room before are starting to, like, lean over, and you see a couple of the waitresses, and you see the chef from before kind of leaning out, because this is loud. And there's like maybe a small crowd forming, and he kind of like looks at them, looks at the four of you and his sister, and says, "Holly, let's take him into the office. Come on." And she's just, "No, I don't." And he's like, "Come on, Holly, let's go." And he like puts his arm around her and kind of like motions his head for you to follow. And there's that door at the end of the lounge area that led into the hallway. He kind of leads you guys towards that, and leads you guys into the office. And once all four of you are in the office and his sister is there, he kind of, walks around, gently pushes her into a chair, which she sits in, and then immediately, like, gets out of because she can't seem to sit. And she's, like, starts pacing. And he, like, stands there, and you see around you a fairly large office. You can tell that it was very lovingly built. It's all wood. It's got a beautiful wooden desk. It's got a window behind it that has some stained glass elements into it that are just, you know, deers and birds. And it looks out on this beautiful, like, back area of, like, of the snow and the woods and stuff. And you can see outside this window, it's starting to get dark outside. The sun is starting to go down, and so it's like that beautiful kind of twilight blue. And he turns on one of the office lights to kind of give you guys a little bit of illumination, and shuts the door, and he says, "I think you need to start explaining yourself." What do you guys do?
Jack's He's going to do a bad thing, like a bad idea thing, and just pull out his badge.
Okay. You're pulling out the real Bippy badge or one of your
the
fake
real
ones?
Real Bippy badge.
Okay. Who are you showing that to?
Both of them.
I see you're just holding it up in the air.
Yeah, I'm just flashing it to them. Let them read it.
Yeah, they can't really see it from, like, far away. Like, and he's behind the desk, and you're kind of more closer to the door, and she's pacing, and she looks at it and goes, "What? Are you the fucking police? The police don't have any fucking answers. I've been waiting for 5 fucking years for my father's..."
Holly.
She stops and looks at you. Like, she's... Her, like, mouth is quivering. Like, she's holding back from something, and she doesn't want to say anything because she's going to keep saying things she doesn't want to say.
"You are right. You deserve an explanation, but I need you to listen."
She's just standing there staring at you, and Grant kind of leans over and he puts his hands on the desk and goes, "I think it's time you explained yourselves."
"My name is Raven Elmora Dark. Ever since I was a little girl, there was something different about..." Oh God, why am I giving you this story again? "Listen, you aren't going to believe this, but I'm a witch."
You say witch, and Grant looks at you like, what the fuck? But Holly gets this look in her eye. You have no idea what it means.
Nigel's kind of glance over her, and she's like, "Yeah, as hard as it is to believe, she is telling the truth." He's going to take off his... the first time he's, like, really taken off his glasses just fully around other people. And, you know, clearly so the scar can be seen. He goes, "4 years ago... we almost died of something that was very unnatural. We came up here because we heard word of something similar going on. And last night, we nearly died to that kind of thing again. And the evidence that we found pointed us in your father's..."
Grant just stares at you. I want you to roll charm to see if you can... It's not that you're lying and you're trying to manipulate him. I just want to see if you can... convey your truth in a way that he believes.
Short of actually lifting my shirt, showing the bandages wrapped around my torso for the bruised rib. That's not bad. 9 plus 1, so 10.
Okay. So he looks at you and he, like, looks at your scar, and I mean, I know the Yeti rumor was going around, but I thought that was bullshit. I thought it was just somebody trying to drum up tourism.
Oh no, it's totally real.
It was now bullshit.
It kicked the ever-loving shit out of us last night, and we barely got away with our lives.
He takes this in, and there's just this moment of, like, he's trying to deny it, but you guys look serious, and he just sits down in his chair very hard. Yeah.
Jack's gonna, like, instead of just holding it up, he's gonna show Grant the badge, like, properly.
Mm-hmm. "Bureau of Paranormal Investigation. I can't say I've heard of them, but, I mean, you guys seem serious. What does that have to do with our father?"
"Well, the Yeti killed him."
As soon as you say that, she finally breaks eye contact away from Raven and just, "What do you mean the Yeti killed him? Dad disappeared 5 years ago. This Yeti shit's only, what, a couple months?"
"It's like a loop thing. It keeps happening over and over again."
"There's some kind of spiritual thing going on. I'm not going to even try to tell you that I believe how it works or know anything of what exactly is going on. But at least 2 separate nights now, you've seen... the same car wreck, the same footprints, the same open clearing, it's hard to say the same body, and we've seen the same beast. There's something going on with his spirit. It's not at rest, and whatever other force is bringing around that Yeti, I would assume that it's now rearing its head again for a purpose. I don't know what it is, but it is legitimately dangerous. I don't want anyone else accidentally stumbling across it."
"Wait, did you just say that it's only been here for a few months, and did you know about it being real?"
"Of course she knew."
She looks at you and at Raven, and she goes, "It's not real. It's just a stupid story that some tourist was telling. And Dad's been gone for 5 years. It can't be real."
"Nigel, do you have that receipt?"
I've got everything over in the RV.
She just, like, at this point, like, she's not looking at any of you, and she just goes over to one of the chairs by the desks and sits down, and Grant is looking at her and goes, Holly, what are they talking about?
I'm going to use my, against my better judgment, I'm going to use my telepathy to talk to both of them in their heads whilst taking a sip of tea, just to make sure that they know that it's not some form of ventriloquism or something, and say, unfortunately, there's a lot that's real.
Grant stares at you, like, dumbfounded. Holly doesn't seem surprised. And when you, the moment you, like, you were kind of, what you were doing earlier was, like, in the same way that people kind of plug their ears not to listen, you were doing the mental version of that with your telepathy. And the moment you undo that, you get this overwhelming wave coming off of Holly of guilt and confusion and anger and disbelief and a very, very light touch of something magic. Not from her, just around her.
Holly, I'm sorry, but denial's not going to do you any good.
At this point, Nida's
going to... I, more than anyone, have been learning that recently.
He's going to kind of, you know, if she's sitting, he's going to kind of crouch down in front of her just to, you know, be more on eye level and just be like, there's anything that you know that, even a rumor, that might help us end this. You would be saving lives if you let us know. If we can end this, that'll be it.
I mean, if she knows what's going on and everything, if she, I don't know if we could, like, get there before it happened, but maybe we could save their dad if before, like, while the loop restarts.
Grant looks at her and says, Holly, what the hell is going on? She looks back at him and just goes, I just wanted to find dad. And she's like, kind of leans forward and puts her hands in her her face in her hands, and she just, you can sense that she's trying not to cry and kind of takes a deep breath. She looks at you, Nigel, because you were the one who's being very kind to her and, you know, leaning towards her, and she says, how much do you know?
Well, we know that on numerous occasions now, a sort of bubble of the past, this is the best way I could describe
she,
it.
She, like, motions to you, so she goes, no, how much do you know about my father?
Oh.
Well, and I kind of look over at Nigel.
Well, we know that he built the lodge, and, afraid to say, I wouldn't really know much else other than that. At least on a personal level.
Just his name and stuff. That's all I found in the car. Registration things, but...
And
we still have that receipt.
And we know that he was a drunk.
Grant kind of, like, scoffs, and Holly, like, shakes her head. Yeah, well, that wasn't much of a secret. My father was a good man. And he built this lodge for us and for my mother. And before everything happened, he was fine. Nothing, he wasn't a drunk. He wasn't, it was perfect. And Grant kind of scoffs and, yeah, perfect. And she looks at him and goes, it was as close to perfect as it could be, all right? And then Mom just left. She, I guess, met somebody, I don't know, some asshole who came in for the holidays and, I don't know, they fell in love or some bullshit. She tried to explain it, and then she just left. And Dad wasn't the same after that. He started drinking, and he got, I don't know, sad, I guess. And, I mean, he did all right with the lodge, and he kept it going, but, I don't know, he just, every night, once everything was closed down and somebody came to take over for him, he just off he went. And Grant, of course, fucking left. I didn't leave Holly. I had to go to college. I don't care. You left, and it doesn't matter. All right? It doesn't matter. You were gone, and it was just me and Dad. And I got tired of it. And she's like looking down at her hands and kind of just like playing around with them. And so 5 years ago, my father and I got in an argument, and I was mad, and he was drunk, and I just wanted him to understand that he had to stop. I just can't handle it anymore. And he was angry and he was drunk, and he said, well, what am I supposed to do then? You're my family. I'm your family. What are you going to do? Are you going to leave? And I said, no, of course I'm not, but you can't. I don't know. And it just went like that for a while, and finally he started to leave, and I said, fine, you leave. He said, I guess I'll just die then. And I said, yeah, fine. If that's what you want, just die. And my father's been missing ever since. So, a couple months ago, I found something in one of the guest rooms.
Do you still have the thing?
Yeah, it's up in my room. It was just a...
I'm gonna need to see that.
It was just a paper. It was from, like, a stupid book. You know, like, those stupid books you could get in high school about, like, oh, do Wicca magic and, you know, get rid of all the negative feelings about your ex-boyfriend.
That's such a bad idea.
Nigel's gonna glance over at Raven and then it's gonna look back at Holly and say, can we see it? This could be very important.
Yeah, fine. Yeah, okay. She stands up and starts to, like, leave the room and stay here. I'll bring it. It's fine. And leaves you in the room with Grant.
Jack doesn't trust us. He's following.
I'll go with Jack.
Okay. So Jack,
you've had good rapport so far, so, yeah.
Yeah. Jack and Nigel, you guys go with her. Elle and Raven, you're left in the room with Grant, and he's kind of just sitting there staring at the desk, and he looks like he is overwhelmed by what is happening. And finally he says, this is some crazy fucking bullshit, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Magic shit is,
are you enjoying your stay at Three Deer's Lodge?
What I said about the waitresses wasn't a lie.
Yeah, they're...
You hire amazing staff here.
Pretty good. You get Charlotte? She's pretty good. She likes to give people donuts when they look like they're feeling down. And then, okay, so that goes on for a little bit. And Nigel and Jack, you follow Holly to her room. And she leaves the door open and walks in. And inside you can see, like, this messy, you know, kind of bedroom suite. It's got like the hotel rooms upstairs, its own little, like, master bath off the side, and a little mini kitchen in one corner, and then her bed and a couch. It looks really nice, and she kind of walks over to the couch, and there's a little stand next to it, and she opens the drawer and pulls out a couple of sheets of paper, and she walks over to you and kind of holds it out to you, Nigel, and says, I thought it was just... you know, from one of those stupid magic books.
I'm going to take it and look over it. And would, like, any of this ring, like, alarm bells to Jack?
For just looking at it?
Like, inspecting it and stuff.
Okay. Okay. Go ahead and roll sharp to see if you notice anything.
In the meantime, like, when she kind of hands it over, like, Nigel passes it to Jack. And the saber.
Sharp, right?
Yeah.
That's what you said? Okay, that's
Nigel
a 10.
Just say to her, you would not believe how real some of this stuff can be. So don't blame yourself for this.
She kind of just looks at you and doesn't say anything and get the feeling like she's not going to not blame herself. And this goes deeper than anything to do with the magic. Okay, so what did you roll?
A 10.
Okay. You look at it and you are not versed enough in magic to be able to tell right off the bat just from looking at some paper and words whether or not it has any kind of power. But you can see certainly that compared to the more benign stuff you would see like in a normal bookstore, this looks like you don't really know how to explain it, but it seems more authentic.
It looks like pro level.
Pro level, yes. So you can't tell anything about like whether or not it's bad or good or real or something, but it seems more authentic than some of the stuff you would find at Barnes & Noble's.
I'm immediately turning around and going back to the office.
Okay.
To hand it to Raven or something.
All right. So the two of you and then Holly leave and she closes her door and kind of trudges behind you slowly and you head back to the office. The four of you, once you arrive back, Holly kind of shuffles in and what do you do?
Well, I'm giving the paper to Raven. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm going to investigate that
heckin' hard.
Okay. I'm not even gonna make you roll for this because, Raven, you are familiar enough with magic. You don't even have to touch it. You can see. It is almost emanating an aura of magic that is far, far more complex than it seems to be presenting in the physical realm. And you take these pieces of paper and you look at them and you're looking at the words that are written on it. And as you do, you read the spell, and it's a spell to find lost things. That's all it's supposed to be. And you recognize it actually from one of your Wicca books from back when you used to read those in high school as an actual spell from one of those books. But there is a layer, a palimpsest of actual magic behind this that has a completely different meaning. It is a spell, as you look at it and you study it and you focus your magic on it, it is a spell that calls something back from where it was lost. A spell that is looking to replace and bring that back. And a spell that is designed, as you read it, to uphold that instance of finding the lost item until the person who invoked the spell is given the opportunity to find it. And as you are looking at this, you also realize that that faint bit of magic that was around Holly, now that she is next to this piece of paper, grows stronger and stronger, and you can almost physically see a thread of magic coming off the paper and onto Holly. And as you do, and you're looking at it closer, you see that it is siphoning off energy from Holly. And you can see that tiredness that you noticed in Holly before, as you've noticed every time you've gone up to the desk, that tiredness is much, much deeper than simply not sleeping well. This magic, this spell, is pulling its strength from Holly's life force.
Well, I have some good news, some bad news, and some worse news. Holly, what you see here, this Johnny come around, something's lost that can't be found stuff. You're right. Just your basic Wicca magics. The bad news is that what you couldn't see is that there was something much worse, much more real, hidden behind it.
Key, I want Raven to roll plus weird, because now I want you to look at this item deeper as you're explaining this. And this is something that you can't just read on the surface. So I want to see if you can pick up on something.
Oh, you can probably guess. 14.
Fuck. Every time. Why do I have... I was like, I'm just going to have... No, I was literally...
was a natural 12.
I was literally like, I'm not going to have...
Lady has this whole campaign planned out. It was going to be like this amazing adventure, and I'm just ruining it.
Let's admit,
it has been an amazing adventure.
I was just going to be like, I'm not going to have Scully roll for it, because of course Raven would notice the normal magic. But then I was like, but I'll have Scully roll to see if Raven notices the slightly deeper aspect. And I'm like, they might not get it. That's a fucking lie. Raven's going to get it every single time.
Hey, Raven failed once.
That she's going to roll over 10.
I still got to make you roll, just in case. You might get a 2 someday.
One of these days you'll get lucky.
Raven, as you're explaining this and you're holding it and you're looking at Holly, as you're saying this out loud, it's almost like the magic that you're holding in your hand reacts, and you recognize a presence. It's that same terrifying, cunning intelligence from the Yeti fight the day before. There is an awareness, an almost as if it knows that you are aware, and it is watching you. You can sense that off of the page. You know that it is not an actual, like, observance. Like, it's not an actual, like, watching spell. But just that this magic is so strongly imbued with the character of the person or entity that put it there, that it can't help but put a piece of itself into that magic that is easily recognizable. You can feel that is the intelligence that was behind the Yeti the day before. Yeah, that's what you notice about it.
My eyes go wide as soon as I notice this.
the dire news that what was hidden behind it is immensely, horribly.
I think we knew that much from last night. So what now? What's our next move here?
Well, there's only one real thing that we can do.
Find it, kill it, see
no.
what we can know.
This sort of spell is a really old kind of magic. Sorts of things that would happen if we were to go and kill that wouldn't matter. It would keep coming back over and over again. Holly, you haven't been feeling very well since the day that you put this into action, have you?
I'm just tired. It's, you know, it's...
It's not just tiredness.
Please tell me we're not going to have to kill her or something.
She, like, the moment you say that, like, looks at Raven and looks at you and, like, gets wide-eyed.
No!
Like, Jack. Jack. Smack
no.
Jack in the back
Jack.
Of the head. No,
God.
Jack, bad.
Grant stands up at that thought okay. and goes, no one is killing my sister, okay?
Believe
that
me,
I am a secret agent.
If I have
I
my way, your sister and you are getting out of this alive. However, the only answer to this, unfortunately, is to see this spell through to the end. And with that, I pull out that lighter that I was using to light the candles from earlier, and I burn the page.
What are you doing? And, like, Tali just, like, tries to stop you for a second and then, like, watches as the entire... Like, it goes up way faster than
like
a piece of
paper.
Yeah, like, flash paper. Like, way faster. And there's this, like, puff of, like, purplish smoke and this, like, flash of purple light for a second that everyone can see. And then it, like... It's almost like the paper wasn't there. It was only just a handful of ashes that kind of float down. And Holly takes a deep breath and goes, "What are you doing? Huh?" And there's this, like, look on her face, and she just, like, huh.
Like I said, it's more than just tiredness. Unfortunately, that also means that the spirit, so to speak, that you summoned, now has lost its ability to feed on you. And it's not going to be happy.
And literally the moment you say that, Raven, you notice that the sun has gone completely down, and it is dark outside now. And you and Nigel and Holly all hear in their minds that same deep kind of roar that you heard the night before and the night before. You recognize now, Nigel and Raven, that Holly is hearing it because she makes that face. She looks scared and almost guilty at the same time. And then the moment after that, you hear a scream. And it's not like it's right outside the window. It's like it's somewhere in the woods, but it's nearby. And that
how
same
far,
presence.
How far are we?
You guys are on the ground floor.
Okay, Jack's going to jump out the window.
It is a solid, thick piece of window. You're...
RV, now. Everybody, let's go.
Okay.
Raven, I want you to roll weird to see if you can get a sense of where this is coming from before everybody disperses.
I have good news. It's not a 14.
Okay.
It's a 13.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, the horror.
Raven, your eyes snap immediately to the window when you hear this, like, sound in your head. And again, by the way, like, Jack and Elle and Grant, you don't hear anything. You just hear the sound of the far-off scream, but you don't hear the roar. Raven, your head, like, snaps towards the window, and you know exactly where it is. It is about half a mile straight towards those woods and somewhere in them from where you guys currently are. It is, like, basically directly behind the lodge.
All right, everyone. This way. Holly, you too.
As soon as kind of Raven gives us like the general direction of how close it is, now it's going. All right, we don't have much time. RV, gear up, move. Like he's basically going to be like the straight there, getting the engine running by the time everyone's on.
Yeah. Okay.
Come on, Holly, let's go.
She just like looks dazed at this point, and she's like, "Yeah, okay." And Grant is like, "I'm coming too. You're not going there without me." He looks like he's...
Please, by all means.
Yeah.
You deserve to see your father as much as anyone.
All right.
And with that, I walk out the door, kind of gesturing them for them to follow.